Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
1250 AM The Fan. Bart Winkler, Sam Schmitz. All right, here is your welcome 10-minute diversion from the Aaron Rodgers saga. This is a favor to everyone. And thanks to Jake Fisher for making it happen. His new book is out. It's called Built to Lose: How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. Jake joins us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Jake, thanks for a couple minutes. First of all, congratulations on getting a book written. I've thought a few times in my life, hey, maybe I should write a book. And then I sit there and then I can't figure out what to write on. And then I know a lot of people have tried and failed. Writing a book, man, that is a journey. So congratulations to you on that first and foremost.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I mean, just like how Aaron Rodgers is, you know, everything and everything in Green Bay, you know, in the NBA, it's probably even more important to get these superstars, and tanking to get them top of the draft just kind of became a pretty good topic for a book.
Yeah, you could tank to get one, or you could just, like, be the Nets and have, you know, three people just randomly come over to you. But I think that the tanking thing that has happened in the NBA, it's become popular for especially teams that don't have the draws of Miami Beach or the LA spotlight. And I think immediately of the Bucks and where they were at, you know, several years ago when there was the draft class with Embiid and then Jabari and Wiggins. And so the Bucks were essentially tanking, trying to get a good pick, a top lottery pick. And they used that on Jabari. What's interesting about that time for the Bucks is Jabari was the focus, but it was Giannis who got drafted in the middle of the round that has really turned it around. And I think that's just a good example of, you can do all this and spend all this time, but there is no guarantee at all that it's going to work. And so is it even worth it? And I know you discovered a bunch of scenarios like that.
Yeah, I mean, I spent 3 years talking to over 300 people around the NBA. One of them was John Hammond, the former Bucks general manager. We talked at length first about that 2013 draft class. You know, obviously Giannis fell to 15 in that year. You know, he had this grainy footage coming out of Greece. A lot of NBA executives didn't really know what to make of it, right? Like, he was playing in, like, these middle school gyms against guys half of his size. But, you know, the Bucks really saw something and saw some potential in him. And when I found out for the book, you know, they really screwed over the Atlanta Hawks. The Atlanta Hawks at the time were the team on the hottest pursuit for Giannis. They actually brought him over under cloak and dagger to visit Atlanta. He had a dinner at the general manager at the time, Danny Ferry's house. They ordered chicken parm and ate at his kitchen table with his kids. They brought him into the Phillips Arena at the time and put on the lights, and they could see tears in Giannis's eyes, you know, after he came over from, you know, panhandling and selling bootleg sunglasses on the streets. But they never thought he was going to be, you know, what he became. They thought he had the potential. They thought he could be a potential, maybe even an all-star one day. They never thought he'd be a multiple-time MVP. And that 2013-14 season, his rookie year, you're right, they did end up tanking, but they were originally supposed to be a playoff contender. But that's how things happen in the NBA. That's why I think team building is so fascinating. There's so many unforeseen variables at play, whether it being, you know, the lottery odds and the lottery luck not bouncing your way, or, you know, if you are Atlanta and the guy you want, the guy you put in all the work for, goes two picks ahead of you, you kind of get screwed over there. So the Bucks really didn't have a choice in 2014. You know, that class, it was featuring Joel Embiid, Parker, Wiggins. It was supposed to be the best class since 2003. And coincidentally, at that time, the best players from 2003, LeBron, D-Wade, and Chris Bosh, were all running the league in Miami, right? So a lot of teams just thought, we'll punt this season, we'll punt next season, we'll collect this next generation of superstars, and by the time they're slipping out of their prime, you know, by the time the Heat start to, you know, wax and wane and their dynasty comes to a close, we'll be here and we'll be contending. And, you know, the Bucks really did think Jabari Parker was going to be that guy. And I think that just goes to show just how fickle this is and why a team like the Sixers and Sam Hinkie's process, why tanking year after year and collecting as many darts to throw at the dartboard, it tends to be a pretty decent strategy, because you are going to make mistakes and you are going to, you know, take a guy number two overall who has injury issues and, you know, doesn't end up panning out. So it really is a complicated and just almost improbably tall task to do. But that's why I think it needed to be encapsulated in a book.
Time with Jake Fisher. The book is called Built to Lose, regarding the NBA tanking era. How do you think that fans have come to accept tanking? Because I know, like, you never want to watch a team suck for years at a time. But you mentioned the Sixers, and while they haven't gotten to the NBA Finals since this has happened, they branded it. I mean, trust the process is a brand over there. The Thunder seem to have their fans on board. Now, the Thunder are going to a wild extreme where it's like they have a third of the draft picks for the next 6 years. Is this something that fans have come to accept as something as a positive for the team?
Yeah, you know, I was talking to an assistant general manager yesterday about this, and he said, you know, the brainiacs got it right, being that, you know, Sam Hinkie was not the only executive to do this at that time period. You know, Oklahoma City did it originally back in 2007, starting with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and James Harden, and then the Oklahoma City Thunder poached Rob Hennigan from their front office to lead their rebuild post-Dwight Howard. Ryan McDonough came to power in Phoenix, Pete D'Alessandro in Sacramento, David Griffin in Cleveland. You know, the rise of analytical-minded executives around the league kind of propped up this tanking strategy, where they calculated and saw, you know, the typical championship team has multiple all-stars on their roster, and the easiest, most direct path to get them is through the top of the draft. So if you're in the mid-tier of the league, you're not going to be competing really against those championship-caliber teams. You know, the Bucks and Six, Brandon Jennings-type teams aren't really going to have a shot at the title. So the best way, especially for a smaller market, to do that is to sink down to the bottom and get these guys. I mean, Jabari Parker and Andrew Wiggins didn't work out, but look what Joel Embiid can do, right? And this assistant general manager I talked to yesterday said the brainiacs got it right. And the fact that now it is accepted, and teams sell hope. They don't sell, you know, the typical concept of, like, you any night you come into our arena, we can have a victory and we can make you proud for your home city. Now it's the fact of, like, oh, one day, you know, this guy is showing great strides. Look at how much he's improving. In a couple of years, when he gets to be an all-star, you know, he'll attract somebody else. That hope is tantalizing and exciting. And Philadelphia, during that time period, they were, you know, leading the league in new season ticket sales and selling that message of one day, of, you know, around the corner, of someday soon. And it seems to be something that, you know, fans do buy. And I think fans want direction. Like, I live in New York. I'm in Brooklyn now. I've been here for, you know, 5-6 years covering the league through Brooklyn and through, you know, the Knicks. And, you know, both these teams have been kind of wayward and not really having a direction ever since I've gotten here. Now they're both on a path. You're right about Brooklyn just signing three guys, and here they are. But, you know, the fact that the Knicks have some type of direction, have some type of identity, you know, teams just want to have that. And a lot of times that identity that really fans respond to is just the concept of, we'll be bad for a year or two, so for the hope of being really, really good a couple years down the line.
Bucks and Six, always. That's for the culture.
Yeah, that's a rallying cry here in Milwaukee for sure. Talking with Jake Fisher again about the tanking era in the NBA. Built to Lose is the book, how the NBA's tanking era changed the league forever. It is out now wherever books are sold. You look at, though, like, I am a big soccer guy, so I look overseas, and if you're bad, there's a penalty. You lose. You go down a tier. You are not in the league anymore. America, it's not like that. If you lose, you get rewarded. You get rewarded with the best player. The Jacksonville Jaguars get Trevor Lawrence. They get rewarded with the best player. It is just, you know, it's weird in America how we, you know, hate different forms of, I'll say, socialism. But then in our sports, we want the worst teams to have the best chance. We root for losing. And what you said about hope, I mean, it is pretty remarkable how you can sell hope and people will still watch a bad product because of how strong that feeling is of hope.
Yeah, I mean, we're also at a situation where a lot of teams also don't really have a choice, right? Like, look at the Houston Rockets this year. They did everything they could and positioned and were strategic to trade for James Harden back in 2012. They built a contender around him. And all of a sudden, you know, there were a lot of variables and factors, but he just says, trade me to Brooklyn. He just says it. And all of a sudden, he ends up in Brooklyn, and now the Rockets are one of the worst teams in the league. They don't really have a choice. Like, there's not going to be a player right now in this current iteration of that Houston Rockets roster after they traded Harden who's going to say, yeah, sign me up. I'm a free agent. Give me the money. I'm coming to Houston. I'm bringing a title to that team. It's just the big markets play a big factor in the NBA. Obviously, we see it in other sports too, but I think in the NBA in particular, like, it's not like football or baseball where players are wearing a hat or a helmet. You know, these guys are out there in sleeveless shirts and shorts with their tattoos on full display and their personalities really on, you know, the center stage. It's a superstar-driven league. They're able to control both sides of the court, like, as good and amazing as Aaron Rodgers has been for that franchise and, you know, arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. He doesn't play defense, right? Like LeBron and Giannis and any type of real superstar franchise-changing talent, they could impact the game both sides of the court for, you know, 40-plus minutes. And that type of influence that these stars have is just so powerful and so different from any other sport that I think it's just kind of tilted the scales out of whack, and it's made the NBA that much more prevalent based on how, you know, these superstars can kind of build up a whole ecosystem and a whole city's downtown and bar scenes and all that type of stuff. It really is powerful what these guys can do.
Obviously, the NBA doesn't want it to be the end of the season where two teams are playing each other and there's no interest in the game, so they came in with this play-in tournament.
Yeah.
Do you think that's enough to discourage teams from tanking? I like the Wizards. Bucks play the Wizards, and the Wizards, normally things go awry for them. Okay, whatever, we'll play it out. But they've been very good the last couple of months because they're, you know, just anything they can do to get that 10 seed, to just have a chance.
Yeah, in 2014, when all these teams were tanking in the book, you know, I talk about it, I wrote about it, I reported on it, but it happened back then where the league and the board of governors were unhappy about, you know, tanking teams coming into their arena, you know, like right in this end of the season, like you're talking about, and fans weren't filling the stands, and it was a problem. And they're kicking around all these ideas, like a tournament where the non-playoff teams all played for the number one pick, or, you know, Mike Zarin, the assistant general manager in Boston, has pitched this wheel concept where it completely detaches record from draft position. The play-in tournament was another addition to lottery reform that was exact in 2017, where now the bottom three teams only have a 14% chance at the number one pick versus in 2014 when Milwaukee, you know, bottomed out. They had the number one odds. They had 25% chance at getting that number one slot that year. And the play-in tournament, you're right, it definitely encouraged teams like Washington and teams like New Orleans to play after it and try to get into that mix there. But I think it's curious. Like the Wizards, for example, they need to be competing, right? Because they have Bradley Beal, and it's the same type of conversation we're talking about. He's a superstar, all NBA guard, leading scorer in the league. You know, they need to do everything they can to keep that guy happy and keep him in a winning environment and keep him long term. They already did their work. They tanked to get him in back in the day. They had him at number three. They picked John Wall number one. That was supposed to be their team, and they've got that core. They got to keep it intact, but what are they really playing for here? They're playing for the potential to be the 8 seed, and they're going to draw Philadelphia or Brooklyn or Milwaukee in the first round. As much as no one wants to face that team right now, you know, most 10 seeds or 9 seeds or whatever in this play-in tournament aren't going to have been riddled by COVID for 2 weeks and have, you know, two all-star type guys. the average team in that situation, they're just playing for the right to get beat in the first round by those top teams, right? So that's why we see teams like Orlando trade Nikola Vucevic and Aaron Gordon and Evan Fournier, because they know they're not going to really make much noise in the playoffs. And in order to really avoid that situation, you know, you trade your guys, you get out of the lottery, and or you get into the lottery and you get your stars. So as much as the play-in tournament is definitely pushing some teams to compete and really push together, you know, a final stretch run here, we are seeing teams across the league, like Oklahoma City, like you mentioned, Houston, like I talked about, Detroit, Orlando. I mean, there's a ton of teams that are still going to play that lottery no matter what.
Jake Fisher, you can also find his stuff at Bleacher Report. Who do you like to come out of the East?
I honestly really do think it's going to be Philadelphia. I think Brooklyn, I would have picked them at a certain point. I definitely was picking them at a certain point. But the fact that they haven't had their three guys together, the fact that they have these injury issues, the fact that they don't have a big man, really, that can consistently guard Giannis or Joel Embiid, I think is going to potentially cause an issue for them over seven games. Now, I could be wrong. I think Brooklyn could ultimately, I mean, they have one of the greatest offenses in NBA history. Maybe James Harden comes back to full health and they, you know, mesh perfectly, and it's just this offensive juggernaut like they've never seen before. But I think Brooklyn, I think Philadelphia and Milwaukee are built to beat that team in the postseason. And I think Philly right now seems to have the inside track at that one seed. So to avoid that brutal matchup,
yeah,
that's
huge.
In the second round, they're going to get the winner of that team in the Eastern Conference Finals, it looks like at this point. That's going to be a huge advantage too.
Jake, appreciate the time, man. The book is called Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. Available where you can get books. Congratulations again, and we'll be sure to find a reason to talk in the future.
I appreciate that. Thank you, guys.
Jake L. Fisher, you can find him on Twitter at that handle. Jake Fisher joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. If you're applying for a home renovation loan and you've been anxious, breathe. Let Great Midwest Bank help you experience a state of banquility. Get started at greatmidwestbank.com.